and welcome to the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy. In every episode, I talk to an author about what inspires them to write, and I ask them for any tips they have that they could pass on to other aspiring authors. Is Alan Owen, founder of LabRats and former chairman of the British Nuclear Test Veterans Association. Alan's written two books himself under the alias Slane McRoth about the British nuclear tests in the 1950s and 60s. He's also worked with a number of nuclear test veterans to help them write and publish their own memoirs. Alan is also the author of Halt to Proceed, a self-help book that he wrote to help both business owners and individuals. Nice to meet you. Tell me a bit about your books, first of all, about what you've written so far.
Yeah, so we've written three published books so far. Mm-hmm. First two were under an alias, all about the nuclear tests and the family of a nuclear test veteran. The third one is about my professional career and a program called Halt to Proceed, which has just been updated this year. So it's had a new release updated this year. And working on an unpublished one at the moment. So yes, it's been over 3 years. We've done quite a few books, really. Helped with a couple of others as well, through yourself, to get them published. Yeah. Lots of veterans have got great stories, but don't necessarily know how to get them published. So
that's really good. Yeah, so you started with the two books about the nuclear tests in the 1950s. What was the inspiration behind writing about that?
My father is a nuclear test veteran. Okay. He was present on Operation Dominic in 1962, mm-hmm. on Christmas Island, part of a joint American testing program with the UK, and was there for a year, witnessed 29 explosions over the year. So I got involved and decided to write a book about the test to raise awareness. Obviously, it was a fiction book. Lots of stories from Wikipedia, but the story actually came from another veteran, the idea for the story, and the end of the story and other parts of the story are actually from another veteran. So it's actually two veteran stories put together.
Okay.
And then they didn't know how to go about writing it or how to do it, so we put it together with the help of, in the first one, especially, you know, some Wikipedia entries and making sure that the dates and things were correct. Yeah. And then the second book, which was
arrived. So that one was the X, Y, and Z files.
That's right, yeah.
So basically it's, although it's fictional, it's actually taken from two true stories.
Yeah, we don't know whether the story itself is actually true or not, because it was told to me by a veteran, and unfortunately that veteran is no longer alive, so we didn't, okay, can't come back to him and say whether it's true or not. He got heard of the story, but the parts of it around, you know, the medical side and things like that are from a veteran, and they are a true story.
Okay, yeah. So then the second book is Fallout, Living Under the Shadow of the Bomb. So
yes.
What inspired you to write that one then?
Again, it came from a story from a veteran, and a combination of a couple of other stories that were told to me about the descendants and how they're suffering, and how they've suffered. The story of the man who actually unfortunately commits suicide is a true story from a widow who gave us the story of her husband actually did commit suicide after threatening to kill the family. So it's based on that true story with other aspects from all of the descendants who tell stories about their fathers and what's happened in their families.
Okay, so you said your father was a veteran. How far does your involvement go with the nuclear veterans?
So I was chairman of the British Nuclear Test Veterans Association for 4 years, mm-hmm. 2016 to 2020. I left in 2020 and set up this organisation called LabRats. Basically, LabRats stands for Legacy of the Atomic Bomb, Recognition for Atomic Test Survivors. And it brings together the worldwide community. So we're bringing together everybody around the world to discuss the problems of the atomic tests. We are an ICANN partner. We are campaigning for the abolishment of nuclear weapons. and we tell the stories of the nuclear veterans and their families and their struggles.
So what's your main inspiration for writing? Because you wanted to tell these people's stories, or was it because you wanted to write a book? Or something else?
For years, I've always wanted to write a book. I've always thought there's a book in everybody, but always wanted to write a book about various things, you know, life or and helping other people. And this opportunity came about from talking to this veteran who said, I've got this story that needs to go out there. Talking to other people and, you know, people like Gordon Coggins, who we've helped for another book, his story, you know, his story of his life is so fascinating. But they don't know how to get it out there, get it to the masses and get it out there. And with technology and the older people, and especially with the veterans, they don't necessarily have got this great story, maybe even written down in handwritten format, but don't need to know how to get it out there. So I'd like to take stories, look through them, see whether there's a book in it, see whether we can help other people get their stories out there. The one that we're writing at the moment is a fictitious story set in the future. It's just there's so many ideas go around your head, but it's difficult to get it out.
Yeah. I've had a sneak preview of that book, haven't I? It's grim. It's a grim story. But it could well be, yeah, it's I mean, God forbid we ever get into the situation of nuclear war, but yeah, it's not pretty reading.
No.
Tell me a bit about your business book, Halt to Proceed. What was the inspiration behind that?
Oh, basically, I did a CLAW social leadership course in 2019, which was a 9-month course talking about how you can help people, how we can change the way people's work-life balances are, how we can, as leaders, can help people in their journeys and empower people. And we'd had a program that I'd been involved in for the last 10 years, developing a software solution that was completely different to the way we'd ever developed a software solution. And it evolved from the combination of those two to be able to basically take a stock of your life and halt and think, am I on the right path? And should I proceed down a different path? Or can I tweak some aspects of my life just a little bit to enable me to have a better work-life balance and to be able to move forward? So that's where Halt to Proceed came from. It was, again, experience, really, is the reason for that book, and talking to lots of people about how we've changed their lives using this software program and this development that we did and transforming it into how we can help people to change their lives going forward, and that it's never too late to halt and stop, take stock, and then move forward. Yeah, everybody makes mistakes in life, and everybody makes in situations that they think they can't change, but they can change for a lot of people. People like, you know, Gordon Coggins, who wanted to write a book and has had his book in him, and he's like, I've got to get this and I really need to do this. So we stopped, analysed it, looked at it, and then obviously pushed it forward.
Okay, so the book is the course in book form, so that you can take the theories behind it, behind the Halt to Proceed process, out to many more people.
Yes, yeah, and it supplements our online learning course that we have, and our we go out and teach people on the course themselves and do training, and the book is there for people to read and keep with them. So when they get to a situation that they think they're in and think they can't get out of it, we'll pick up the book, reread the steps, step back and analyze. And we've got one lady that keeps the book by the side of a settee in her house. So when she comes home at night with a situation that she thinks she can't control or is getting to her, she'll just pick up and say, right, okay, let's just stop and rethink.
When you hear about your books being used in everyday life by people, that must be really, really quite something.
Yeah, it is. It's, to get that sort of feedback is fantastic.
So how did you go about the writing process? Do you have a sort of a certain way that you go about writing or planning or...?
I tend to binge write. That's the right term for it or not. I don't know whether that's the right term. The X, Y, and Z files obviously was evolved over a year of talking to the veteran and the story and incorporating another veteran story into it. So that took a lot longer, whereas the Fallout book was written over, you know, 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
I tend to focus on it and go for it and do it. And obviously you help massively with it to be able to push it backwards and forwards before it gets out there. So that's invaluable for me, because I can write all day long, but actually getting the correct pronunciation and spelling and grammar and everything else that you do. It's really comprehensive. But yeah, I tend to have an idea and go for it.
Okay, yeah. And do you plan it out? Do you kind of have a plan of each chapter, or is it just in your head and you splurge it out on the paper?
I tend to write down the headlines, the ideas behind it first, as an idea, and leave that in a file that's sitting on my desk at the moment and sit and then think, right, okay, and write it out and then go back to it and say, is that right? Is that correct? Obviously, we pass it to like yourself, which we did to read it, and so that it can be moved about and expanded or take bits out, move it around. But it tends to be in my head.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, some people can do that. Some people have it in their head and can just put it straight to paper. And some people need to kind of plan it to the nth degree so that they know exactly what they're doing. So it's always interesting to hear, you know, the people's different ways of going about writing.
Yeah, I mean, I have an outline plan, but not a detailed plan.
Okay. It obviously works for you, though, because, you know, you're three books down, one on the way, helped other people with their books as well. So it obviously works for you to do it like that. I'm more of a planner, I think.
and funnily enough, that's a complete opposite to the way I work in a professional life. Because I have a to-do list every day, everything's planned.
So the books have all been self-published, and you've already alluded to the fact that I've helped you with them. But can you just talk us through the publishing process and why you chose to go that way, maybe?
Obviously, the book world and getting your story out there in a mass of all the others that people have, the manuscripts that all these book publishers have, can be really difficult. And we found that the subjects that we were concentrating on were very niche subjects. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a bestseller of, you know, a horror story or a crime story or whatever. It was really narrowly focused. So not everybody would be interested in that subject. So also what I found when looking around at publishers is the process is very long-winded, and I'm not a very long-winded person in terms of getting out there. And it's like, send this copy, send this, we'll have a look at it. We might get back to you, we might not get back to you. There are some unscrupulous publishers up there that want to take money off you before they even do anything with you as well. And you get a lot of the, we can help you, we'll get you published, we'll do this. But then when it comes to the end of it, they go, actually, we want thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah, no, sadly, I've met a few people who've fallen for, I mean, it's vanity publishing, basically, isn't it? Hand over thousands of pounds and we'll publish your book for you.
I spoke to another veteran that had actually fallen into that trap, that they published for him. And he's sitting on hundreds and hundreds of copies of a book at his house.
That was the thing. You hand over your money and we'll give you 1,000 copies. And what do you do with 1,000 copies? Yeah,
exactly. So he was stuck with all these books.
Yeah. Whereas at least print on demand means that you don't have to hold the stock. So your book's out there for anyone to buy. And so you went the print on demand way, didn't you, through Amazon?
Mm-hmm. And really, the reason that we went that route there was a speed aspect to it, because obviously, like you say, it gets uploaded, it's on, it gets run through very quickly, especially when you, like yourself, who's an expert in getting them on there, that, you know, once you've got the manuscript and you've got the cover, you've got the book, you've got all the details, you've got the description, everything goes on, we work the cost out and there it is. Yeah, it's real, people can buy it. Yeah, online straight away. What I didn't want was to lay out, because the profits from the book were going to a charity, I didn't want to lay out and be stuck with 2,000 copies and never make a profit and never have anything. So what we decided to do was we actually gave all the profits to the charity and all the money that ever came in from Amazon. So it didn't actually make a profit, but we actually gave out all the book sale profits
The charity. This is the thing, isn't it? When I talk to people who are thinking about writing a book, I've always said to them, why are you writing? Why do you want to write this book? And some people say, oh, because I think I can earn some money from it. And I say, no, don't do that. If you're unlikely to get back what you spend on just getting it prepared, don't write it for that. Write it just because you want to, because you want to see your name on it, to raise your profile, to raise the profile of a cause, to tell your story. But don't do it for money, because there's no money in writing, is there?
Yeah, I think some people see that they're going to be the next Stephen King, and without actually realizing, reading the Stephen King story about how many they struggled before he even made any money. Yeah, it's that they think, well, I could write that. Well, you can write that, but being a James Herbert or a Stephen King, or they didn't do it overnight. It's a long, long process.
Was it J.K. Rowling was rejected by 21 publishers before she got accepted, I think, so for Harry Potter. So it can happen to her then.
And I think there's also the time aspect as well of getting it out there to publishers and handling the rejections and sending another one out and getting another rejection. And you know, this whole process that you have to go through, self-publishing, and it's there. And if people want to buy it, they buy it. And it's not done for the money. That's not what it's about.
No, it's very much for raising the profile of the stories, isn't it? And for working with the veterans and sharing their stories. So what have you learned about yourself through writing?
One thing I learned is that the story is good, and that you can have an idea. Getting it down onto paper is a little bit more difficult than you actually think.
Even with your splurge technique?
Even with the splurge, it sometimes it can be, you can write and you're looking at your word count and you're looking through it. And then when you read it back, you think, okay, oh, that needs to be expanded, or it needs to be cut down, or it needs to be changed. But the one thing that I found, and I've had feedback on this, is that sometimes you assume too much. So you will put something in, like I would put in, say, Rika in a book, and people go, what's Rika? I know what it is, but people don't.
No idea. Yeah,
it's the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is.
And that's where the beauty of having, like, yourself to look through it. And I think that's where the problem is, because you know your knowledge, you just put down, well, I know that, I can write that, I can do that. And then when you read it back, you think, actually, would they know that? If they picked this up and I read it on a subject that I didn't know, would I know? You know, we're doing a lot at the moment around DNA techniques and talking to people about DNA sequencing and things. And it's like talking a different language sometimes, because it's so complicated. And yet when somebody actually sits down and explains it to you, it's not so bad. But when you actually read it in a paper, you're like, crikey, that's really, really complicated. And I think that's the area to try and get away from that I found was quite difficult, was, you know, we're heavily involved in the nuclear tests and the nuclear test veterans and the families. And we've got lots of acronyms. You know, people go, oh, it's Operation Grapple or it's Operation Dominic. And people go, well, what was that? Just because our community knows that,
doesn't
necessarily mean that the reader's going to know that. They might have just picked this up to think it's a great book.
No, that's right. And it's finding a way to kind of explain either complicated terms or to explain, it's kind of like the code names almost. Yeah, I mean, they are code names, aren't they, for the operations, so that anyone can understand them, but without dumbing it down, without patronising people. I think.
Yeah, it actually hit it home to me, because I put a post out on social media and I just put that I'd spoken to our MP. And a lady, because we're dealing internationally now, from America, said, what's an MP?
Oh, gosh. Wow. Yeah.
Even to that level.
Everyone in the UK knows what an MP is. And yeah, you just assume that.
They did. Yeah.
No, that, I think that's a really good point, actually. And yeah, obviously that's something I do when I'm proofreading books, that I know a little bit about lots of things, but I'm not an expert in most things. So I read it very much from the layperson's point of view. So I will come back and say, well, hang on, what's this? And what do you mean here? And I think I know, but I'm not quite sure. Yeah, so that your book can then be something that can be picked up by anybody who doesn't have any knowledge, any background knowledge, and can understand it.
And one of the mistakes we made a little bit with the X, Y, and Z files was that we gave it to the Board of Trustees to read before it was published, so that they could read it through to make sure everything was okay and they were happy with it before it went out. But of course, they were all in the nuclear field as well.
Right.
Instead of giving it to somebody who didn't know, which is where you came in, because you helped us with it. But I gave it to some people, you'd be interested in this, so you read it, because they all knew about it already. So.
Right, yeah. So they missed those things that it was just all first-hand knowledge to them, whereas I didn't even know that the UK had been involved in nuclear tests up till that point. Having proofread all your books now, I feel like I know quite a bit more about it. No, I'm not an expert, but, you know, I feel like I've got some knowledge in that.
And that's not been a struggle for me, but it's had to go back and reread it again and give it to somebody who is not involved at all, and just go, I've got a good friend who reads it as well, who's not involved at all, that would say, I have no clue what you're talking about. You need to explain what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think having, they're known as beta readers in the trade, having beta readers is really good, not just to kind of check that your book's actually enjoyable and that people want to read it, but yeah, just to do that kind of sanity checking that you haven't assumed too much and that it is going to make sense to someone who's not you.
I mean, yeah, all of my books are, you know, fictional stories that have come to me via other people or of my own, apart from Halt to Proceed, which is obviously a program to follow. So they're not factual history books, or, you know, but they've got dates and things in them of when things happened, and we've got that sort of information in there. So that needs to be checked as well. So I would say that if anybody is thinking about doing it, and what I learned from it was to, you need to explain things that you don't necessarily know people would know.
Make no assumptions.
That's actually part of the Halt to Proceed, is one of the steps is assumptions, and never assume, because so it all dovetailed together, actually.
That's right. Halt to Proceed, you obviously knew the process that you were writing about inside out because you developed it.
Yes.
But did you learn anything while you were writing about it? Was there anything that sort of hit you?
We did learn a little bit about it, that it's more difficult to write it than to present it.
Okay.
So it's very easy for me to present it in a day. I can stand, I know the subject very well, so I can just blur, and react to the audience that are there, the people that are on the course, and you can very easily just talk backwards and forwards. Whereas when you're sat writing it, you're not looking at an audience, so you can't react to the audience that are there. So if I was doing it for senior managers, it would be slightly different to somebody who is a lower employee or a board of trustees, like we did one for the board of trustees. So we adapted, but we were trying to find out the book to meet all of their needs in one go. So that was quite difficult to put in all the different aspects. And that's one of the reasons why we updated it, because we got feedback from people saying, well, it's great for a business, but not necessarily for personal. So we added a bit of the personal touch in as well after people had read it. It was more difficult to write it without anybody being in front of you. Yeah, we were trying to take a course that was being presented and put it into a book that people could pick up at any time and read.
That's really good for people to know, because I think a lot of people, who are writing books related to their business, might have the same problem, that it's one thing explaining something to a client or to a group of people, or to be presenting it. But to be writing it when your reader is not that specific person sitting in front of you, it's a kind of a much wider audience that you've got, kind of trying to incorporate everything in and to make it reader friendly and useful for everybody, not just for the sort of the one subset that you might have been presenting to.
Yes, and we tailored our courses to meet that subset. So if I was going to do managers, then we had a specific set, whereas the core was the same, but the way you presented it was different. So getting that over to people in a book was a bit more difficult. Yeah, you would put different experiences into different courses. So.
Okay, yeah, so those kind of examples, case studies almost, you can tailor them, but you maybe can't quite tailor them so much when it comes to writing a book. I can see that there would be difficulties with that. So well done on achieving the book, on getting the book done. So has anything interesting happened as a result of writing these books?
The Halt to Proceed has gone very well. It's gone down very well with lots of people. The two veterans books have raised awareness for the organisations that they're involved in and the nuclear veterans. There's been a little bit of fallout recently regarding it, because obviously I'm now saying that I am the author of that book. But generally, the feedback's been fantastic, and that they want me to write more. One of the big things that's really come out of it is they want more veterans want me to help them to get their story out there.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, because I don't know how many veterans there still are around, but there must be so many stories to tell.
It's frightening, their stories. You know, these are stories of their time on the island and at the tests in Australia and Christmas Island. Mm-hmm. And for me, I don't want these stories to die. And that's a horrible thing to say, but they are in their 70s and 80s. And lots of the stories have already died with them. And they really want to get their story out before they pass on. So for me, what's come out of it is that by publishing the books, people have gone, I can do that.
Right.
I could write that story. I don't know how to go about it, but I've got that story.
Right.
Can you help me get that story? So for instance, Gordon Coggins, we've helped with his book.
The life of a Yorkshire lad.
I really enjoyed
that. It was a very, not just the new, his whole life. So it wasn't just his experience on Christmas Island, but it was other things in his life, and it was very...
Yeah, that's right. It's his whole life story, and it's fantastic to see that what the stuff we suffer from in the nuclear test veterans is people see their time on Christmas Island or they see him as a nuclear test veteran, but these people have got whole life stories. Mm. You know, they were there for a year, a part of their life, but now they're in their 70s and 80s. Lots of them had army careers or RF careers or Navy careers. Some of them were national service, but others went on. If you read Gordon's book, I mean, he went on to do so much.
Yeah.
These guys are amazing. They're absolutely amazing. And I think that that's really what's helped them bring them to the forefront to go, right, okay, get your story out of there. Come on, let's get your story out of there.
Right. Yeah. If he's done it, I can do it too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, they've got them. A lot of them have got them already written, or they're already in ideas, or they're in drawers, or they're in handwritten notes, or they're, you know, I started it 10 years ago, or I started it 15 years ago when I retired, but I've never done anything.
Yeah.
So, well, let's get these stories out there because they're fantastic.
So many more memoirs to come, or maybe compendiums of memoirs or.
Yes. Yeah. There's a fantastic book, produced by in America, which is stories from atomic veterans. Mm. Which is a compendium of all the stories.
Yeah.
It would be fantastic to do, because it would be great that these are the stories of the veterans, and they're there forever then for anybody to read, whoever picks up.
That's true. Yeah. And it's a kind of a very important but a very little known part of history, I think. Very important to get those stories out there. So hopefully I can help you along with some of those.
definitely. Yes. I mean, the process that, you know, we went through with yourself was just seamless. It was easy. It was great.
Thank you.
I was never written a book before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I could do it. Anybody can do it. You know, I'm technology minded. I can do it. Write a book, put it on Amazon. It's easy.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Sorry when you know what you're doing. It's all right when you know what you're doing. So now that I can probably call you a prolific author, because you've written three books and you've got another one on the go, what tips would you give to anyone else who's thinking of writing a book, a memoir, a business book, whatever it might be?
I would say do it. Yeah, take the time, think about it, and do it. If it's in you, then it's in you. And really sit down, go for it. Not to be afraid to write it, to get it on paper, but do not fall foul of, you know, spending thousands and thousands of pounds on with people that are promising you the earth to get your book out there. Using like yourself that gives an honest opinion of the book as well, which I think is very important. Yeah. You know, you may think it's the most fantastic story in the world, but you need feedback. You do need feedback. Yeah. And you need to be aware that things that you're putting in there might not be understood by somebody, like we were talking about. And I think it's really important that you, as an aspiring writer, go, yeah, right, I've got this story, I'll do it. And then give it to people, give it to your family, friends to read, give it to other people to read and go, what do you think? And then, yeah, give it to a professional like yourself who can go through it. Take the experience that you've got and take it on board and work together and get it out there. I think that's the key thing.
Yeah, just do it. Just get on and do it. Yeah. What you said about giving it to people to read as well is really important. I think a lot of people write things and then they think, I don't want to show anyone it. I'll just publish it. But for all the reasons of, does it make sense? Is it a good story? Is it an enjoyable, easy read? You don't want to put something out there that hasn't had that feedback, I think.
And take the criticism, because... And you may think it's fantastic. I mean, I've done it. I've proofread some stuff for other people and given them feedback, and give it to people who you know are going to give you the feedback. Yeah. And change it accordingly and put it out there, because it will be better for it if you do that rather than just pushing it out there.
Yeah. Hardest part of my job, that is. When my own book, I gave it to somebody for proofreading, and I was shocked by how much red was on it when it came back. And I said, but I've written a wonderful book and there's all this stuff she's picked up on. But some people, when I'm working with some people's books, they don't want feedback. So I just pick up on things in the comments when I'm proofreading it. With you, you did actually say and tell me what you think about it. And yeah. I think I did.
You did. And it was great because, yeah, I gave it to somebody else to read.
Yeah.
And their opinion was almost the same.
Ah, there we go. Validation. So, that's good.
Yeah. So there we go. So it wasn't just self. And I think that's what we've got to do is if you are selling it out there to somebody who you've never met, you don't know, is going to buy this book, yeah, you don't want them to be disappointed at the end. You want them to be, actually, I quite enjoyed that. Yeah, like Gordon Coggins' book, you read it and you go, yeah, this is good. Yeah, the same with Joe's book, The Curse of the Cloudfires. It's a fascinating story. Mm. Absolutely fascinating. And you know what he was forced to do in the cloud, flying through the cloud, and you get engrossed in it. And I think that's the key thing is if somebody says, well, actually, you need to spice it up a bit, or I find that a bit boring, or could you put this in, or is there something missing here? Other people are going to think that at the same time.
No, that's right. And again, because it's your story, you know what happens. So there could be things that it's this assumptions thing again, isn't it? You know the story, so you assume everyone else knows the story. So if you miss a bit out, then it doesn't matter to you. But somebody else will say, hang on a minute, how do they get from there to there? Because, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's important that, like yourself, you look through the whole story and go back to the start and look at the whole book and go, well, hang on a minute, that doesn't quite flow. You say this at the start, and then you say this at the end. Well, that doesn't match what you said at the start.
Yeah.
And as a writer, sometimes you write it through, forgetting what you said at the start or in a chapter or even in just one little paragraph and think, actually, that doesn't work now. We need to go back and change that because that doesn't work to what that is.
Yeah, yeah. Another reason to get other people to look at it, definitely.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the original book was given to 5 trustees to read and all their feedback was positive. And yes, it was a good story. So, yeah, that was good in terms of the story. So get good feedback, and sometimes you get actually it could be a bit better. Could be not, but take it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big Stephen King fan myself. Big fan of Stephen King. And yeah, if you listen to some of his podcasts or you read some of his stuff, he's the same. Yeah. I have to thank these people for helping me write this book. I don't do it alone.
No, that's right. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Yes, we generally write on our own, but actually it's a bigger process because you discuss your ideas with people, you take on board people's feedback, and that's what makes it the good finished article. If you just do it on your own, if you can't draw on that feedback and that criticism, then your book, you're not going to be improving your book and making it as good as you can.
And what, that's one of the things I took on board from listening to one of his podcasts was that he wrote a book called Sell, and he wasn't technically minded about the sell part of it and how the mobile phone works. So he got an expert in to give him that feedback on that and how it should work.
Mm.
So when we were doing the first book, you know, the stories around Christmas Island and what was happening were from a veteran, firsthand from a veteran. Because he was there, he'd experienced it, he knew about it. It was his knowledge that helped it along.
Yeah, yeah. And you're not going to get that from just reading Wikipedia. I know Wikipedia articles provide a lot of the fact behind the story, but you're not going to get that personal experience just from reading something on the internet, are you?
And his input and his wife's input were invaluable
because
she also prompted him. You told me that story a couple of years ago and you told me that. You know, so I think that for me was great to listen to their stories, but to get it on paper was fantastic.
Mm. So it's a truly collaborative effort.
Yes.
To get the story out there, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like the one we're writing at the moment, you know, you've helped with that one already. You know, other people have read it. It's going to be enhanced before it comes out, and it'll go through lots of iterations. Mm. And I think sometimes people think, well, I can write that. I've written that. Here it is.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not the finished manuscript by a long way.
No, probably the second, third, fourth, or even fifth draft is the one that's going to make the cut. But yeah.
It's good. I don't know how many drafts we went through.
Quite a lot. Yeah. A few. So what's next for you? You've hinted at this unpublished book. Is it going to be called Joe? That's the name I have.
It's going to be called Joe, yeah. At the moment, that's the working title, whether it changes or not. Okay. But yeah. That's the next one to come out. I'm busy with work at the moment and obviously doing lots with lab rats and things at the moment, but it's going to be enhanced. I have written a couple of extra bits in it following the feedback, so that's good. And then we'll get it out there hopefully by the end of the year. But for me at the moment, we're helping other people. I've got another veteran that wants his story out, so hopefully that will come out as another book. That's more of his life story as well. He's putting together for us. My ideal is to write a compilation book on UK veteran stories from their stories. So one of the things we want to be doing next, as well as my personal one, is to try and get people's stories together, mm-hmm. so that we can have, you know, a compendium of 10, 20 stories put together in a book. Yeah. These are the voices from the nuclear tests.
Reading your books has really opened my eyes to something that I didn't know about. So yeah, I can recommend them to anyone who wants to know about a rather dirty, unpleasant part of modern British history, really.
The two original books, you know, they are veteran stories. Yeah, you know, we did enhance them, we put them together, we collaborated all together to make it work. And it came out really well. It was a good story, and they are, you know, fictional stories. We don't know whether they're true or not. Yeah, some people's there from people's memories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they are a good story, and sometimes it's the good story that raises awareness for things.
Yeah.
And you know, we can sit. One of the problems that we've had is I suffer a little bit with an HR man saying, "Who's going to sit and listen to me?" Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an old man now. I sit. It's like, well, yeah, but your story is fascinating. And you will be amazed at how many people will listen to your story.
Oh gosh, yes, definitely, definitely. I'm really glad that you've been outed as Slane McGroth, the author of the first two books. Now, I know I was looking at your Amazon reviews for the X, Y, and Z files, and one of them said there, "Oh, I think this is fictional because there's no Joseph Robertson listed Queen's Honours, and there's no Slane McGroth profile anywhere." And so it's quite nice to know that you've been outed now.
Yeah, it was done as an alias because the board and myself thought it was better that it didn't actually come from me. There's lots of things going on about that at the moment. You know, some people aren't very happy with it, some people are happy with it, some people don't care. So it was a great story and raised awareness. You're always going to get that. I think when you write any book, you know, people are going to say, this is rubbish, this is good, this is not good. At the end of the day, the charity made over £600 from it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So, that's bad in book terms, actually.
So they've made you know, some money out of it at the end of the day, which is what the aim and the objective was.
Yeah.
And to raise awareness of the nuclear veterans and the tests.
Yeah. That's definitely the biggest thing, I think, in the case of those books, isn't it? To raise awareness and tell those stories and share them. So it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Before we go, can you just tell us where can we find you?
You can find all my details, especially with the lab rats and the nuclear testing, are on our website, which is labrats.international. That's a brand new website that's been created with all the information on there about what we do and how we work and what we're doing. And you can find all my details on that website.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Any final words before we go?
Just to say, if you are an aspiring author and you think you've got a book in you, you should do it, but you should use a professional like yourself to be able to. You should. I'm not saying this just because I'm on this podcast, but you should do. You will get the right feedback at the correct price, where no rip-offs, no people saying, promising you something that you can't do. And your name will be up there as an Amazon published author. It's great.
Thank you. I'm going to get that as a testimonial on my website. Thank you very much, Alan. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. Much for listening today. Thank you again to my wonderful guest Alan Owen. You can find out more about Alan Owen's work with Labrats International at labrats.international. The two books he's written about the British nuclear tests are The X, Y, and Z Files and Fallout, and they're published under the name Slane McGroth. That's S-L-A-I-N-E McGroth, M-C-R-O-T-H. And you can also find Alan's own book, Halt to Proceed, which is written under the name Alan Owen. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with the dogs, as usual. You can find out more about me, Alison Thompson, and the services I offer authors under the banner The Proof Fairy at www.theprooffairy.com. Thank you again for listening. Please subscribe, rate, like, review, tell your friends about this podcast, and I look forward to bringing another amazing author to you next week.